Hey, everybody. It's on the Charlie Kirk Show. The original crypto Bitcoin investor being targeted by the Biden regime. I think he deserves a pardon. Watch his lawyer, Tracy, convince me live on air. Ryan James Gruduski, who we really enjoy, talks birthright citizenship, Trump appointees, and a classical American educational revolution. And get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Become a member today, members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. As always, get to AmericaFest at amfest.com, amfbst.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Very interesting guest here. Joining us now is Tracy Thurman and also Roger Ver, who will not be talking, which is very interesting. Tracy and Roger are with us. This is all in the context of President Trump appointing friend of the show and friend of mine, really great American, David Sacks, as AI and crypto czar. For those that don't know Roger, you can check out his website at freerogernow.com. That's freerogernow.com. Freerogernow.org. Andrew, can you help introduce this before we throw it to Tracy and Roger?
Yeah, so Roger Ver, and they'll have a chance to tell their whole story, is one of the pioneers of the crypto space, one of the earliest investors in Bitcoin, then came out with Bitcoin Cash, really a pioneer in a space that is going to define the future in a lot of ways. And so I think he's a national treasure. There's some controversy, obviously, surrounding his backstory, but a lot of people feel Roger's getting unfairly targeted. He's under investigation. They're trying to extradite him from Spain, I believe. He can clarify me if I'm wrong, or Tracy can. But essentially, the IRS has been on him. He's got a long history of saying, you know, please pay all my taxes. Lawyers and accountants had to flee the country. And so it's a cautionary tale about when our government gets really aggressive, the IRS specifically. And so I'm excited to get into the details.
And let's see if they can win me over to advocate him for a pardon.
There we go.
All right. With all that buildup, we have Tracy Thurman and Roger Ver. Welcome, Tracy. Walk us through all of this here. And thanks for taking the time.
Charlie and Andrew, it's such a pleasure to join you guys. Yes, I'm here with Roger, my friend, who is facing 109 years in prison for attempting to pay his taxes properly. As you can see, he cannot speak today. Anything he says can and will be used against him. And it's just simply too big a risk that the IRS will use anything that comes out of his mouth. The DOJ will use anything that comes out of his mouth against him. So I'm here today and I want to tell you, I want to answer your questions in the way that I believe Roger would answer them if he could speak freely today.
Okay, and well then walk us through the history here. So yeah, sorry, I know that you guys were overseas. Who is Roger? What is he accused of? And is there political bias against him because of his, let's just say his passion for cryptocurrency?
Yes, there's absolutely a bias against Roger. This really goes back 24 years when Roger faced charges after he criticized the IRS and the ATF. And he criticized the ATF for what they had done in Waco, Texas, and the ATF became obsessed with targeting him personally. And so they played the game of find me the man, I'll show you the crime. And he faced charges for selling fireworks on eBay, a thing which hundreds of people were doing. Cabela's catalog was selling them. And yet they chose to go after one man and one man only at that time for selling these. And that was Roger. So he actually served time in federal prison for that, at a time when nobody else selling these was being bothered at all. And then, so when he got out of prison, it was clear to him that he was a target of the U.S. government. The ATF, by the way, in a meeting with his attorneys and with the prosecutor, went as far as to say when, you know, when the prosecutor was saying, you know, maybe we should just give him a fine, just tell him to go get a license to sell these things, said, but you didn't hear what he said about us. So this was clearly a case motivated by hatred for what he had said about them. So the minute that Roger could leave this country, he did. And in 2006, he moved to Japan. And as soon as he could, he gave up his U.S. citizenship and got citizenship in St. Kitts and Nevis because he needed somewhere else to belong and did not feel safe being an American any longer, which as an American is horrible to me, right? We should be proud of our country. We should keep our best and our brightest. We shouldn't be chasing them out. And so at that time, he had to, when you renounce your U.S. citizenship, there's something called the exit tax, which is this unconstitutional tax that you have to pay upon leaving if you're worth over $2 million. And Roger did his utmost to fully comply with that. There's a motion to dismiss that you can find on freerogernow.org, which lays it all out and shows without beyond a shadow of a doubt that he did everything he possibly could to comply. And yet the U.S. government has been going scorched earth against him since that time, attempting to take him down. And why are they doing that? Well, Roger's been one of the biggest critics of the U.S. government's, many of their programs. He has been funding the anti-war movement. He's been funding the anti-lockdown movement. He's been funding the medical freedom movement. He's been funding the anti-censorship movement. And he's been one of the biggest voices behind crypto, behind decentralized finance, behind permissionless peer-to-peer exchange of value. And that is a threat to the deep state. And that's why they're after Roger.
You know, this is a pattern. We saw a similar type of lawfare against Ross Ulbricht, who definitely did some things wrong, but does not believe, you know, deserve two life sentences for that, for similar type of cryptocurrency related pioneering. Tracy, can you explain that a little bit more, that people that get into cryptography, that get into some of these alternative ways of disrupting our the antiquated currency model and in new technology seem to be recipients very forcefully from the federal government and the traditional banking system?
There is no greater threat to the traditional banking system than permissionless, peer-to-peer, decentralized exchange between individuals. There's simply no greater threat. And so if you are a person who supports that, if you're a person who pioneers that, if you are one of the people that who enables that, you have a target on your back. There's absolutely no question. And few people did that more than Roger did. He was the earliest investor in cryptocurrency, in the cryptocurrency space, the earliest investor in Bitcoin, promoted it at a level that nobody else did. You know, early on, he'd go into a coffee shop and get coffee and then offer to pay in Bitcoin. Or he would just walk up to people on the street and say, hey, let me help you set up a Bitcoin wallet. Let me tell you how Bitcoin works. Let me help you with this. And of course, the people who accepted that from him have done very well for themselves. If you started taking, if you got a $10 worth of Bitcoin from Roger when it was $2 to $3 a Bitcoin, you've done very well. And this is why they hate him, because if you are a central banker, nothing terrifies you more than people being outside your control, outside the control of the Fed, outside of the control of the coming CBDC system. And in a world where people are being debanked, where people are being deprogrammed, where people are being censored, the most powerful thing we have is permissionless finance. It's Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin Cash, it's all of these cryptocurrencies. And so anybody who has promoted these and has promoted them to the world is a massive threat.
Andrew, you have a follow-up here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at this, Tracy, and seeing the way that the world has shifted. I mean, obviously, remember back to President Trump speaking at the Libertarian Conference, one of the biggest applause lines that he got was when he said, we're going to set up a Bitcoin reserve at the federal government. He was going to create a hub here in the United States to become a hub of innovation, pioneering when it came to blockchain and crypto. And so it feels almost like you were caught in a moment of time when this technology was so new and it was this emergent threat, and they thought that they could stomp out one of the innovators behind that. But it has grown so tremendously in the years that have followed. Are you guys watching this from abroad and seeing the changing climate? And you have to be feeling somewhat optimistic about the future is shaping up.
It's beautiful to see the way that crypto is being embraced by more and more people. And honestly, I think that's due in large part to the lawfare that so many people in the incoming administration have personally faced. Look at what Donald Trump has faced himself. Look at the evaluation of Mar-a-Lago case. Look at the New York cases. Look at the DC cases. All of them are just outrageous, clear targeting of a man that the deep state does not like. And anyone who has been through that, we know Melania was debanked after the election in 2020. She revealed that she and possibly even Barron were denied bank accounts at that time, and their bank accounts were closed. And so people in this administration have a sensitivity to this and an awareness of this issue that has never been present in the executive branch before. And that's very exciting for those of us who are fighting this tyranny, because we feel like maybe for the very first time, we have people in a decision-making role who will understand and appreciate this problem. And maybe, we truly hope, will step up and not just pardon Ross on day one, but pardon Roger as well. Or possibly the incoming DOJ will recognize what an atrocious case this is and dismiss the charges entirely.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. As we gear up for another important election year, remember that we vote every day with our dollar. One of the best ways to support America is by buying from local farms and ranches. Good Ranchers makes this easy by delivering 100% American meat to your door. When you shop with Good Ranchers, you're not just getting the best meat for your family, but also supporting American farmers and ranchers. This year, instead of buying imported meat, cast your vote for American agriculture and local economy. I've used Good Ranchers meat for quite some time, and they never disappoint. Whatever your choice of protein, you'll be pleased if you cast a vote for Good Ranchers. Use code KIRK for $25 off your order and your choice of free chicken breasts, ground beef, bacon, or wild-caught salmon for a year. It's time to make a stand. Vote for American meat with Good Ranchers. Your purchase helps keep American farms thriving and ensures you get the highest quality meat for your family. I love Good Ranchers. You should check it out right now at goodranchers.com. Use promo code KIRK. That is goodranchers.com. Check it out right now. Promo code KIRK.
It is freerogernow.com.
.org.
I'm sorry. Both work, actually.
Oh, good.
I think.
Fair.
Yeah. Enough. I typed in .com. I don't know. I'm sorry. Freerogernow.org. So Tracy, I want to ask here. So the president could unilaterally pardon Roger or get these cases to be reassigned. And again, just remind our audience, what exactly is the accusation here, that he didn't pay his taxes? It sounds bizarre.
Yeah, the accusation is tax evasion. And as soon as you start to look into it, you realize it's utterly ludicrous. He's accused of not paying enough on the exit taxes in 2014. And then he's accused of not paying enough in 2017. In 2017, it's bizarre, right? Because by that point, he wasn't a U.S. citizen. So why on earth would he needed to have paid those taxes? And in 2014, it gets a little complicated, but to break it down really quickly, when you exit the country and you exit, you know, you give up your citizenship, you have to do something called a constructive hypothetical sale, which is that you pretend you sell everything you own in one day, the day before you leave. And the reality was that Roger owned such a huge percentage of the Bitcoins in the world at that time that if he had tried to sell them, the trading volume was, I think, $10 million. And so anything you sold over $10 million was utterly worthless. And so if the government's rule is, if you sold everything in one day, how much would it be worth? The answer is anything over the global market cap for that, for that asset is worth nothing. If everybody in the entire U.S. decided to sell their house tomorrow, would you get Zillow value? I think all of us know the answer to that question. So they essentially want Zillow value for everybody's home if everybody sold on the same day. That's what they're asking for out of Roger. So it makes no sense. But what it came down to is that Roger consulted the best tax accountants, the best lawyers in the entire country, hired the best possible team. And he told them, look, I know the IRS doesn't like me. I know I'm going to be audited. I know they will attempt to come after me. I need you to do this perfectly. I need there to be no mistakes. I need every T crossed. I need every I dotted. And that's all in the emails that he sent to the accountants. So we know that he wanted perfect compliance. And how do we know that? We know that because in 2017, they raided his attorney's office. Armed federal agents raided his attorneys, jeez, interrogated his attorneys, seized reams of documents from his attorneys and attempted to use them against Roger. And this should terrify every American because they're attempting to destroy attorney-client privilege using this case. If what you say to your attorney is no longer private, what chance do you have? What chance do I have? So this case should be horrifying to every American because it's about destroying your attorney-client privilege. and it's about destroying your right to rely on your accountant, your right to rely on your attorney when it comes to the U.S. tax code, that 70,000 pages of which none of us can possibly memorize. And so if they do this to Roger, they're coming for the rest of us next. It's terrifying. But yes, the president can unilaterally decide to pardon Roger. The incoming DOJ could decide to drop the charges. And we fervently hope that one of those two things will happen, because this lawfare needs to end. The incoming government needs to say, we've been the victims of lawfare. We need to look at everyone else who's been a victim of lawfare, and this needs to stop. Otherwise, our country has no chance. We as Americans have no shot unless this stops, and it stops now.
I totally agree. And you have convinced me, so you could add me to whatever list you want. We're going to send out a tweet trying to say that we want to see President Trump, you know, get rid of the lawfare here, as he was once victim of one.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
a pardon, lifting of charges, whatever it takes. It's time for a clean slate and to free Roger.
Well, to that point, Charlie, I mean, Roger, I know you can't talk right now because what you say could be used against you.
He's got a great poker face.
Yeah, I mean, I applaud you for showing up nonetheless. And I would just say, as a country that is now poised to become the center of the crypto universe, you know, we're gonna need a lot of things. We're gonna need more energy. We're gonna need more power. We're gonna need more data centers. We're gonna need more innovators. And we want to be a hub that invites and welcomes and celebrates our pioneers and our innovators, instead of harassing them and driving them away. And to the extent that Charlie and I and the show could be a platform and a voice for that, I think we're happy to do it.
So very, very convincing. Tracy, thank you. You won me over. And for whatever that's worth, we'll be pushing any way we can. Thank you guys so much. Hope to meet you as a free citizen, Roger. Thank you.
We can't wait till Roger can come back on. And trust me, the minute he can talk, he would love to come back on and talk with you guys again. So again, everyone, please sign the open letter at freerogernow.org requesting a pardon from the incoming president. And Charlie, Andrew, thank you so much for supporting this. You have no idea what it means to us.
We are 100% behind it. You won us over. Thank you. Joining us now is one of our favorite guests, Ryan James Gerdusky. Ryan, welcome back to the program. Lots to discuss here. We're going to cover a bunch of topics and kind of go all over the place. First, Ryan, your opinion on the current status of Hegseth and what is going on right now with Donald Trump's cabinet appointees.
You know, I think that Pete is probably the only one who's on the cusp. I think that I think the pressure campaign against Joni Ernst may be effective. But he is the one that I think is probably the most problematic. Maybe Cash Patel is going to have a little bit of a tough time. RFK Jr. has to answer for a lot of questions. For everything that RFK Jr. has said, it makes a lot of sense. He has said some things that are very, very strange. I think the rest of them, honestly, though, are pretty good. And aside from Pete, the other ones are more likely than not.
So what do you have to make about some of the Senate Republicans that are fighting Hegseth despite being from very deep red states?
I think that a point of a Senate confirmation is to ask tough questions. I think it's very important to do that. Had Republicans not asked tough questions, Harriet Meyer would have been on the Supreme Court. So it's not a bad thing to ask him tough questions and to sit there and have your own conscience of your vote. But the point of a cabinet secretary is not that they are confirming their own cabinet secretary to believe their ideas and their policies. It's to say, are you qualified for the job? And then it's Donald Trump's decision, just like it was Obama's, just like it was Joe Biden's, just like it was, George W. Bush's. So the litmus test shouldn't be, does this person have my shared ideology? It's, can this person do the job? Which is a very, very important, question. And it raises some concerns over some other nominees. But I don't think that that's what they're questioning Pete over. I don't think the question over Pete is whether or not he can do the job. I think a lot of it is a lot of, questions into his personal life that have really nothing to do with the position. And the blackmail and the smear campaign is really to embarrass him more than to ask if he's qualified.
So Ryan, shifting gears here, you have a very interesting news story. Andrew, why don't you tee it up here?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about that as we were prepping for this, and you just actually, on your Nationals Populist newsletter, it's your Substack, everybody check it out at natpop.substack.com, you have a new piece out here, and I found it extraordinarily fascinating. You actually have been diving into birth rates, and you mentioned that there was a little bit of a upturn, a little bit of a mini baby boom in the last year. What did you find there, Ryan?
Right. So the CDC posts monthly updates on CDC Wonder, and that's Centers for Disease Control, obviously. And the birth rate of the United States went up slightly this year by 0.5%, which is a decent amount for a single year. But it didn't come from Americans. It came from people, mothers who were not born in America. One in four births in 2024 were by women who were not from America. Particularly large increase came from people on the NCHV parole program that Joe Biden did. So it's people from Nicaragua, Haiti, Cuba, and Venezuela. Venezuelans specifically have a 55% higher birth rate than they were last year. Part of that is because there's more of them, but part of it is because they're on this two-year program that Joe Biden made up on his own that does not give them refugee status. It just allows them to apply for asylum while they're here, and then they have to go home if they fail to get it. Well, if you fail to get it, as most of them probably will, because they're probably not legitimate asylees, what better way to stay in the country than have an anchor baby? And really, birthright citizenship, as Donald Trump is becoming president and people saw that this election could go either which way, a number of women either came across the border, illegal aliens came across the border pregnant in their ninth month, or they got pregnant while they were here for the purpose of delaying any possibility of deportation or making it much harder to separate families or use whatever case that was. So really, the baby boom was a big part of the baby boom came from our anchor baby system and our birthright citizenship, which the Supreme Court, by the way, has never ruled that illegal aliens have the right to birthright citizenship. That's been the way we've worked it. That's the way we've been carrying it out. But the Supreme Court has never actually ruled that illegal aliens have that right.
I want to emphasize that. That is so baked into the consciousness of what we think our law, but it's actually not. How did it originate? And is it time to bring that up for a declarative Supreme Court decision? Would we win? I'm not even sure we'd win with this court, Ryan, because people so believe that it's the 14th Amendment, right?
14th Amendment.
The 14th Amendment has some wonderful parts of it. It also has stuff about like debt ceiling. It is the most expansive. It does. It has like six or seven clauses that are not just about the abolition of slavery.
Ryan and Ash were talking about this when we were discussing the segment, as how literally the 14th Amendment is
the catch-all.
It's a catch-all, and it's used for a myriad of societal ills, for bad judgments up and down the aisle. And this one, I think, Ryan, maybe you know the history better than I do, but basically it was like an 1890s case or something, and we just sort of assumed. Yeah.
It was for an Asian man who had he had status to be in this country. It was like a work status of some sort, or like a work permit of some sort. And he had a child who was here, and is that his child was an American citizen because he was legally allowed to be here. And that was why they sat there and said, if you're legally allowed to be here and your child is here, then their child is a citizen. It was never ruled for illegal immigrants. I think it was Justice Black who wrote something in an indentation in the 1960s or 70s, Ann Coulter constantly writes about this, in the 1960s or 70s, that created the idea that it belonged to everybody. But the Supreme Court has never ruled on it. If this court did it, I don't know. Roberts has been fairly good in immigration. The two that have not been wonderful are Gorsuch and Barrett. So I don't know. I really, really don't know. But it does need to be decided upon by the courts, because it has been a major factor in birth tourism. People using our country's law to sit there, come here, and be granted welfare status because they're their child, and make it impossible to deport them.
Look, I'm going to be realistic about my diet in December. It's going to be the worst month of the year in terms of eating right. Inevitably, all of us are going to be stuffing ourselves with treats, meats, and dishes into our mouths, leaving very little room for the right stuff. But I will take Balance of Nature every single day. Balance of Nature is made from whole fruits and veggies. I will not skip taking those daily supplements. It's one thing I'll get right, because feeling good is important to me, especially in December. Join me in pushing back against the dreaded December diet crash. Get Balance of Nature today. Use my discount code Charlie and sign up as a new customer to get 50% off plus free shipping and their money back guarantee. This is an awesome December discount, but you must use my discount code Charlie Call them 800-246-8751 and use discount code Charlie, or order online at balanceandnature.com and use discount code Charlie to get 50% off plus free shipping.
Ryan, again, you might know this better than I, but here's the actual language. This is from the 14th Amendment. It says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, meaning they're subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, this language has been parsed apart, I mean, a lot over the years. And, I mean, if we go back to the original, the debates within the Senate when the 14th Amendment was getting codified, what does that tell us? I mean, were senators literally saying, like, hey, if you just drop a baby off on this side of the border, then obviously it's an American? Or was subject to the jurisdiction thereof meaning something different?
No, of course they didn't think about illegal immigrants in, you know, 1866. This was not even like part of the conversation. It was for the descendants of slaves, so that way they couldn't be denied citizenship, and it made sense in the time. It had nothing to do with it. They weren't even thinking about immigrants. It was literally just for slaves. And it has just been, you know, this open-ended question, and we have lived with it. But it is time, I think, for the Supreme Court to at least rule upon it, because I don't think there's a way of getting an amendment change through the states at this point, or through the federal government. I think only the court could do it. And I think that we would probably have at least four votes off on the court. And it would just be decided if one more joined them. But it's very clearly not in the Constitution that anybody with a plane ticket could have have their child be a subject of the United States, a citizen, and therefore make it very difficult to deport and have every benefit of the welfare system and the education and everything. No, this is ridiculous. No one thought this in 1866. There were no planes, and now there is this whole entire thing. There's a whole entire economy built around it. But specifically, when you have a president like Joe Biden, who so flagrantly ignored the letter of the law and protecting our borders, and let so many millions upon millions of people in this country, larger than most states, is the new population that came in, they're all going to be trying to have children because they want to sit there and have an anchor to protect themselves, to be part of the United States. It's ridiculous, and it needs to be looked at this point. And it's obviously now 1 in 4 births are by mothers who were not born in this country. That's huge.
Well, and Ryan, I mean, I don't know if you saw the news, Charlie, you saw it. The number one baby boy name now in the UK is Muhammad. Just happened this week. I think it was already the case in like Ireland as of, you know, or Scotland, over the entire UK.
Yeah. I think it was England had that a couple of years ago, but they have this story out almost every single year. I think it's almost clickbait because they just change the way the spellings are. They combine all the spellings. It's not right.
They requalify how. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
requalify how they do it. But
But an executive order would go directly to the Supreme Court if you want to get a decisive decision on it. And again, there is no guarantee that we would win the side that we believe that birthright citizenship.
Yeah,
there's no guarantee. It's just. It's so baked into what we think is constitutional. And you're trying to tell me, Ryan, there hasn't been a Supreme Court decision on this in 100 years?
No, not on illegal immigration. Nope, there hasn't been. They've never addressed it. They've never talked about it. There's no answer to it. And it's a major thing. What are we going to wait for? A third of births being from non-citizens? There is no greater country than the United States in the entire world. Who wouldn't want to try to come here? And if all you need is a plane ticket and 9 months of being pregnant, you know, just wait around for 30 days. And that's why places like in Los Angeles and Miami and in New York, that's what they're all doing. I mean, in New York at the Roosevelt Hotel, there was a ton of 9 month pregnant women getting in there knowing that Joe Biden was going to deport them and that they were going to have an avenue towards citizenship when their child sponsored them one day. It is American people are being hoodwinked into this because there's been no action by the courts, and the courts need to sit there and say, no, an illegal immigrant's child is not a citizen by the 14th Amendment.
Andrew, you have some thoughts here.
Well, no, I mean, we were just talking about, you know, the Department of Education. I believe you were talking about that with Chip Roy, the impoundment question. But, you know, Ryan, I think it's the 1776 Project PAC.
Yeah.
And you have done some amazing work there. As we look to the horizon and what can be done about, you know, Charlie says college is a scam. Maybe you fall somewhere there. We also have local school boards, which you've been working really hard on. Just size it up as a first question. Isolate, what are the biggest problems in American education and how do we address them?
The biggest problem is the teacher schools, the teachers' universities. It's universities where you learn to become a teacher. So there's University of Chicago at Urbane. This is just one example. There is a professor known as Rochelle Gutierrez. She's an award-winning math professor. She teaches people how to teach math. Her entire curriculum on math is about the decolonization of math, how you strip whiteness from math. And she's what and she has had hundreds, if not thousands, of people pass through her classes learning how to be math teachers from her examples. And they come, you know, if you think of the average person who wanted to be a teacher when you were younger, when you met them in grade school or high school, they were just probably, you know, a girl who wanted summers off and liked kids and yada, yada, yada. And then they go through this radicalization program through these teachers' colleges. I think one thing that what could be done and that some places have started doing is I think there has to be a way to change the accreditation process around what it is to be a teacher. I don't think you should have to go to the teaching colleges to supplement for being a teacher. I think you could have classroom time or something else along with a comparative degree in order to become a teacher. So that's one thing. Curriculum is another thing. We flipped the Miami-Dade School Board back 2 years ago. They've started a program to change the way they do literature and English language arts, ELA, to be classics, to base it on the classics. And when you have a classic-based curriculum in the public schools, which is possible, you no longer have the worry about teaching anti-racism language and literature because of that. I would say the third and final thing I'll say is that the tech in school is problematic because while the textbooks are incredibly regulated, the apps that most teachers use are not regulated. 97% of all apps are given to schools for free with the sole purpose of then reselling children's data later on to other companies. It is preposterous, and there's a ton of woke language within the apps themselves, and they're very unregulated as opposed to textbooks, which are very regulated.
There's so much here, Ryan. We only have 2 minutes. I'm going to ask a broad question, and we could pick this up at another time. Do you believe that we are looking 5 years prior to now and now 5 years ahead, so a 10-year window, we're heading in the right direction of a classical-based educational revolution?
Yes, 100%. Classics schools are popping up everywhere. Public schools are reforming to adopt that. And for the first time, Republican state legislatures are really genuinely caring about education because of what happened 2 years ago. My PAC is launching a foundation called the 1776 Foundation. We just started it, where we're going to work on having school boards meet with each other from different districts across the country to discuss what policy changes are happening in one place and how they can happen every place, and broadening that communication, which doesn't happen enough. It's happening on the local level, and it's happening now at the state level. The federal government, now that Trump's president or will be president, I think that the grant program and the way that money is doled out will be the very, very important thing, because a lot of stuff happens the way that D.C. doles out money.
Ryan, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We'll have you on again soon. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.